Well, we are starting, as I mentioned at the beginning of the service, we're starting a new sermon series where we are looking at seven of the most common questions that people have about the Christian faith. And if you've hung around churches for, you know, a couple decades, you might think these are a little basic, but let me share why I think it's important to address these questions. A little societal context for you, courtesy of our benevolent overlords over at Google. I looked at the online search trends over the last year, and in fact, I looked at what were the most searched phrases that contain the word God. So just throw out some ideas. What do you think are some phrases that people searched for worldwide, most common, that have the word God? Is God real? Any other ideas?
Why does God allow suffering?
Why does God allow suffering? Does God exist? Any others? Now, I'm going to give you extra bonus points because you're really close. Except it's actually the phrase God of War, which is a very popular video game series. All of the top searches are variations on searching for that video game series. Nothing about faith. Not in the top search results worldwide. And so, you know, a few decades ago, when the Beatles' John Lennon said that they were more popular than Jesus, and he got a little flack for that, well, now a random video game can prove that they are more popular than God. Times have changed. And so I don't think we can assume that everyone knows all of the basics. In fact, I think we should assume the opposite, that what people think they know about our faith is based more on cliche and caricature than reality. You can see at the top of the image on the front of the bulletin, you can see all of the questions that we're going to be addressing over the coming 7 weeks. But I do want to put a little asterisk here, because I am not the, you know, Moses coming down from the mountain, Charlton Heston, I have all the answers guy. That is not me. I don't have all of the answers. I don't want you to assume that I am right. Instead, I want to equip you to read the Bible yourself, to wrestle with your faith yourself, to talk with God yourself, and I'll give you some ideas and pointers along the way. And so this series isn't about you listening to Cody's answers to these seven questions. This series is about helping you find out your own answers in conversation with the living God through prayer and through Scripture. Paul writes in his letter to the church in Philippi to continue to work out your own salvation with fear and trembling. And that's what we're going to do for the next 7 weeks. If you or someone you know is wrestling with one of those questions, you can find the schedule of when we're going to be dealing with those questions on the back of your bulletin if you want to make sure to come or to bring your friend on that particular Sunday. This week we are asking God, does life have a purpose? And there's actually a whole book of the Bible dedicated to exploring that question. That's the book of Ecclesiastes. That's in the Old Testament, which is like the first two-thirds of the Bible. And it takes place during the height of the kingdom of Israel, written by King Solomon, who was the wisest, the richest, the most powerful king that Israel had ever known. In fact, other kings and queens from thousands of miles away came to pick his brain on their domestic issues. And this was back when, you know, travel was by camel, not by airplane. So coming a few thousand miles to ask another king a question, he must have had quite the reputation. And near the end of Solomon's life, he pens this rumination on life's purpose. He lists everything he has tried, every way he could think of to try to find purpose in his life. He reflects on power, on wealth, on influence, on faith. There's a lot of good stuff. It's a bit long-winded, but there's a lot of good stuff nonetheless. And we're at the beginning of his book, and he calls himself the teacher. In other words, he's writing all of these things down so that future generations can learn from his experience, his knowledge, his wisdom, and his reflections. So let's see what the teacher has to say to us about the purpose of life. Ecclesiastes chapter 1, starting with verse 12. I, the teacher, when king over Israel in Jerusalem, applied my mind to seek and to search out by wisdom all that is done under heaven. It is an unhappy business that God has given to human beings to be busy with. I saw all the deeds that are done under the sun, and see, all is vanity and a chasing after the wind. For what is crooked cannot be made straight. What is lacking cannot be counted. So I said to myself, I have acquired great wisdom, surpassing all who were over Jerusalem before me. And my mind has had great experience of wisdom and knowledge. I applied my mind to know wisdom, and also to know madness, to know folly. I perceived that this also is a chasing after the wind. For in much wisdom is much vexation, and those who increase knowledge increase sorrow. So I said to myself, come now, I will make a test of pleasure. Enjoy yourself. But again, this also was vanity. I said of laughter, it is mad. Of pleasure, what use is it? So I searched my mind how to cheer my body with wine, my mind still guiding me with wisdom, and how to lay hold on folly until I might see what was good for mortals to do under heaven during their few days of life. I made great works. I built houses and planted vineyards for myself. I made myself gardens and parks, planted in them all kinds of fruit trees. I made pools from which to water the forest of growing trees. I bought male and female slaves, had slaves who were born in my house. I had great possessions of herds and flocks, more than anyone before me in Jerusalem. I gathered for myself silver and gold, the treasures of kings and provinces. I got singers, men and women, delights of the flesh, many concubines. So I became great and surpassed all who were before me in Jerusalem, but my wisdom remained within me. Whatever my eyes desired, I did not keep from them. I kept my heart from no pleasure. My heart found pleasure in all my toil. This was my reward for all my toil. But then I considered all that my hands had done and the toil I had spent doing it. And again, all of this was vanity and a chasing after the wind. There was nothing to be gained under the sun. This is the word of the Lord. So thanks be to God. Wasn't that uplifting? Who knew Solomon is such a Debbie Downer, right? The phrase he uses over and over again in this book of Ecclesiastes is that all is vanity and a chasing after the wind. Now, what does that mean? Well, when I think of vanity, two stories from my life come to mind. One is when I was growing up, my parents had a business, and in this business, they leased offices to other businesses, and my parents employed receptionists and typists, and this was back when you had receptionists and typists and giant copiers and not cell phones and desktop printers, you know? And they took their best receptionist with them on the National Convention in Washington, D.C., and she was very beautiful. My mom used the word glamorous to describe her. And one night, to reward her for how well she had been doing, they said, here's $200, and this is 1980s money, so $200 was worth more then even, and go have fun on the town while my parents were at a business meeting. And the next morning, as she showed up to breakfast, the results of the previous evening were written all over her face. Literally. She had had her eyebrows shaved and had tattooed eyebrows to replace them, but she hadn't chosen wisely the artist. So the color was too dark for her hair. It was a little too arched, so she looked surprised all the time now. And to top it all off, they were crooked as well. But other than that, it went great. As a side note, if you ever think, I'm going to go get a tattoo on my face on a business trip with my employer's money, not the wisest idea in the world. But luckily, she was their best receptionist. So they kept her around, even though everyone now asked, why is she looking at me funny? And so if you want to know what vanity means and what it gets you, that's kind of all you need. Chasing perfect beauty, no matter the cost, and winding up worse off than you were before, that is vanity. Now, we probably think of beauty when we think of vanity, right? We think of image, but I don't think it has to always be beauty. The other story that I think of is I knew someone who spent the first several decades of his life chasing after one goal. He said, if I just could save up $6 million, I would have enough for anything my heart desired. I'd be set for life. And so he spent his whole life, pinching every penny, not just every nickel or dime, every penny, and chasing every way to make more money. And I don't know if he got there, but I know he got really close. And then he was happy and fulfilled. And oh, wait, no. No, he said now he needed $10 million. That's right. So chasing a perfect bank account, no matter the personal cost, no matter the cost to your family, and then finding out you're unhappy when you get there, that's vanity too. Solomon, though, he's got us all beat, right? I mean, he says he applied his mind to wisdom and to knowledge. He sought to impose justice to be fulfilled. He sought out levity and partying. He tried drink. He tried sex. He built buildings. He built the temple of God. He accumulated wealth. He garnered respect among other kings. He even tried gardening. I mean, he tried everything. And what does he discover? I considered all that my hands had done and the toil that I had spent in doing it, and again, all was vanity and a chasing after the wind. I went on my own Solomon journey when I was in college. You know, I made money as a computer programmer. I made good grades. I took interesting classes. I don't remember my like major related classes, but I remember, you know, the class I took with the local weatherman, or my rhetoric of satire class, where I got to write reports on Mel Brooks movies and South Park and The Simpsons. You know, that was money well spent. And I spent a whole summer investing in my athletic ability. I broke down video of Dirk Nowitzki's shot in basketball, and I became a better shooter as a result. I can still shoot the basketball because I did that. I created impressive projects. One of them landed me my job in machine vision at the National Instruments. I wrote humor articles. I learned how to do animation and actually had a cartoon on a humor website. I garnered a tiny little bit of fame as someone from the church choir recognized me as the guy from that humor website, even though we had never met before. I took up fencing for a while, with swords, not post holes, and got my scuba license. But like Solomon, after all that I had done, it felt like I was chasing after the wind. Because no matter how much I did, no matter how much I learned, no matter how much acclaim I garnered, I was never filled. There was always that void within me. Ernest Hemingway wrote, "Life is just a dirty trick, a short journey from nothingness to nothingness." He would have got along great with Solomon, I think. But that's how it felt, as fulfillment slipped through my fingers as if I were chasing the wind. But notice, in the list of everything I did, in the list of everything that Solomon did, what's missing? What never makes an appearance? Well, how many friends are on that list? To address that, let's look at my wedding invitation list. I'm not even talking about the wedding in Michigan. I'm talking about the party we had in Texas afterward. So this is a lower bar than even wedding invitation. There were people from my growing up days. There were people from my high school days. There were people from my, you know, working young adult days. There were people from my seminary days. Guess how many people from just my college days? Zero. I didn't have any relationship that started in college that continued even to the point of inviting them to a wedding party, not even the wedding itself. And for all that I accomplished, I didn't have meaningful relationships. And that was one of the biggest sources of that void within me. And Solomon came to the exact same conclusion. In chapter 4, we were in chapter 1 and chapter 2. By chapter 4, he reveals one of the few things that is worthwhile. And you've probably heard some of these phrases before, maybe at a wedding. Two are better than one. Pity anyone who falls and has no one to help them up. If two lie down together, they can keep warm, but how can one keep warm alone? A cord of three strands is not quickly broken. And so for all of the things that Solomon discovered are not fulfilling, deep and meaningful relationships are worth something. Not just Facebook friends, not just Instagram followers, not even just hi, how you doing, neighbors over the fence, but meaningful relationships. People who can pick you up when you're down, who can stand back to back with you when you're threatened. Those are worth something. Deep relationships are part of life's purpose. Now, that number is going to be different for every person. You know, if you're an introvert, you might be fine with one or two. If you're an extrovert, you might need six or seven or eight or something like that of those deep relationships. But think internally. Think about, do you feel relationally filled? If not, no matter how much you do, no matter how much you learn, the void will never go away. But that's only half of life's purpose. I was listening to an interview on NPR like about a year ago, and it was with this woman who had tracked some people who have faith in God and believe in an afterlife, and then other people who had faith in the non-existence of God and non-existence of the afterlife, and she kind of looked at how they reacted to life and then wrote a book about it. And at the end, the interviewer asked, you know, well, I've got to ask, you know, what's your takeaway from this? What do you believe? And the author's answer was fascinating. She said something like, well, I wish I could believe in an afterlife, to believe in God. I'm almost there, but I can't quite convince myself that it's true. But my friends and my family who do believe, they go through life with a sense of hope that I don't have. They think they have a purpose and a destination. And if they're wrong, they're still benefiting in their life today. That's a fascinating answer that I wish I could believe because I see the impact it has on people. In our first text today, Jesus said, strive first for the kingdom of God and his righteousness, and all these other things will be added to you. In other words, whenever we seek God's purpose in our life, we find our own life filled with purpose as well. It's one of those strange things. Whenever you seek to fulfill yourself, like I tried in college, like Solomon did for his whole life, you find yourself empty. But when you seek God's purpose, you find yourself filled. It's kind of like if you go back to your dating days, and if you ever got in a rut, and you had a dry spell, some doldrums, and whenever you decide, oh, I don't need to be looking for a date, that's when you get a date. It's kind of like that. Although, public service announcement, you can't trick the universe. You can't, kind of reverse engineer that and pretend you're not looking. The universe always knows. But what's interesting about faith is it doesn't change our circumstances. That author that was interviewed on NPR, she didn't say, I wish I could believe because my friends who have faith don't experience bad things. That's not what she said. She said, they have a sense of hope that I don't have. She said, they handle it differently. And she thought better. With our VBS kids this week, we showed them these life preservers, or actually the real one here. So, with the life preserver, what does it do? It keeps your head out of water, right? But does it teleport you back to land? Does it elevate you over to a boat? No, it just keeps your head out of water when you couldn't stay swimming otherwise. And faith is kind of like that. It keeps your head above water when you would otherwise sink. Now, to illustrate that, what does this look like? Let's imagine that you told me you were going to give me a once-in-a-lifetime offer, that you were going to crush me with 3 times my body weight. You were going to shake me for 20 minutes really hard, drop me from a very high place, and it would take so long to fall that I'd get queasy as I was falling. I'm probably going to pass on that. But if you told me, oh, that's because you're riding a rocket to the International Space Station, I'm ready to go right now. Hopefully the deacons can give my family some meals or something, because I'm going to be gone for a couple weeks. So whenever we have that purpose, it lets us endure so much more. Solomon writes near the end of Ecclesiastes, the end of the matter, all has been heard. Fear God, keep his commandments, for that is the whole duty of everyone. Our faith and how we seek God's purpose in our lives, that's the second part of our life's purpose. And whenever we seek God's purpose, it's like riding that rocket for me. I can endure a lot if you're sending me to space with a good destination. When I'm seeking God's purpose, I can endure so much more in life than if I just were serving myself. So how is your faith life? How are you striving for the kingdom of God, not just your own little fiefdom? If you feel that void in your heart that you can't fill with everything you're doing, if you feel a sense of emptiness somewhere, take a look at your faith life. Maybe check out an online email daily devotional, or join one of our Bible studies, or go serve somewhere at our community dinner or our pastor's breakfast, or be an usher or a greeter. Do something to invest in your faith and see if that helps fill the void a little bit, when nothing else will. When I was in high school, I acted in it and helped with the crew of several different plays. And even if you've never been in a play, you probably know this. Does it take more than one person to do a play? Yeah, there's a director, there's stage crew, there's someone on lighting, there's someone on sound. Even if the play only had one actor, there'd still be a lot more people involved. It takes a lot of friends to pull off something as grand as a play. And sometimes our role in that isn't being the main actor. Although actually the last play I did, I was the main actor, and I got a little award for it. But you know what I'm most proud of from that play? It wasn't the acting. It was in the play, I was supposed to be this songwriter, and every time we got in the rehearsal, we would just, oh, here's where the song is going to be played. And then the director realized a week before the opening show, oh, wait, we never actually made the song. Whoops. And so that evening, I went home, and I actually had a piano. I used to play the piano, a piano chord progression I'd been working on, and my mom helped me write a song that fit the play. And even though it was performed by someone else, that's my proudest contribution to the play, not the acting. Not the time I was on the stage, but the time behind the scenes. And sometimes, it's what the most important thing we do is behind the scenes. Whenever you seek God's purpose, you may not be the headliner anymore. In fact, let's drop the may. You aren't the headliner if you're seeking God's purpose, because Jesus is. But you may not even be on stage. You might go from the center of your universe to a stagehand in Jesus' play. But that play can't happen without you. And we are a part of the still unfolding story of how God is redeeming all of creation. That is a pretty grand purpose. That's better than my whole life is about getting $6 million in the bank. When we play our part in that grand faith story, when we play our part alongside other people who we have deep relationships with, that's when we find our life's purpose. That's when that void will finally be filled. So be a part of something grand. It means you can't be the main actor in your own little play. In fact, you might not even be on stage anymore. But when being a part of Jesus' story alongside others, that'll keep your head above water when you would otherwise sink. Being a part of Jesus' story alongside others will keep you grounded when the earth is shaking. Being a part of Jesus' story alongside others will fill that hole that you feel in your heart. And nothing else will. Trust Solomon on this. He tried everything. Nothing else will fill that hole. Thanks be to God. Amen.